Our gospel lesson, which comes from the gospel according to Mark in the 5th chapter. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. Pardon me, it starts in verse 21. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue, named Jairus, came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet, and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all she had, and she was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say who touched me?" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. And now may the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our rock and our redeemer. There were very serious regulations in those days. To be near a person with open wounds or with a skin condition or who was openly bleeding would render one unclean just to be in the presence of them. To be unclean for a time would disqualify you from certain important parts of public life. For that reason, anyone who had any of these issues were expected, indeed required by law, to make their condition overtly known and to hold themselves aside from any activity which might render someone else unclean. But she didn't seem to care about the rules. She didn't seem to care about all those other people in the crowd that day. It was simply said in the story that we just read, she came up behind him in the crowd. That is, she stalked Jesus. Knowing full well that her condition would be an encumbrance to others, Without consideration, she set her eyes on what she wanted, and she wouldn't let the agendas of anyone else get in her way. She elbowed her way through the crowd, past all those others who were trying to catch a glimpse of the man, others who needed something from him too. Their needs didn't even register to her, nor did his schedule. He was on his way with Jairus, a very important and influential man, to see about healing his daughter, who was on the brink of death. None of it mattered to her. She snuck up, took what she needed, and vanished into the crowd. So why are we so quick to let her off the hook? Don't we generally read her story with more excitement than with contempt? Yes, she was in a tough position. Her condition had been not only debilitating and dangerous, but also alienating for her entire life. And so we have pity. But still, there is a right way to go about getting help, isn't there? And of course, Jesus, in the end, blesses her. And so we, as Jesus' followers, obviously do the same. But why are we so quick to jump to understanding in her case? What if it had been one of us in Jesus' position? What if we were the ones with the thing someone else needed? Say, walking from the parking lot of a shopping center into a store when a person whose illness, mental illness, had left them in a dangerous and debilitating life on the streets approaches. One might worry about how being near them could affect one's own comfort or even one's own health. I hope they don't touch me, one might think. They slow us down on our way to do what we've come to do. And besides, isn't panhandling illegal? Are we as willing to let them off the hook? Or what if it weren't one of us? But what if it were us collectively who had the thing or things others needed? We've had the good fortune, most of us, to be born or to have arrived into a land where opportunity abounds. Some of it is due to our hard work, but most of that fortune was here when we arrived. The gift of those who've gone before us. Others who stand opposite an imaginary line weren't placed into a land of opportunity. And so many sneak, just as the woman who approached Jesus did, into the place where their needs and those of their families might be met. But there is a right way to do that, isn't there? In this case, it has been said not that what they are doing is illegal. No, the adjective has been turned into a noun, a title. It is said that they themselves are illegals. See, the tendency in our day is to react more strongly against those who try to avail themselves to healing, wholeness, and grace than we do against the woman we read about at the center of our gospel story this morning. It's easy to see in a story 1900 years old and far removed from our culture an opportunity for grace. So easy that we tend to overlook the fact that the woman was committing a crime. We don't notice the risk she was putting on other people. We give her a pass on being selfish because, well, she was ill and needed to be made whole. And how is she any different than a million others in our world that we aren't so quick to let off the hook? She is different because she is no threat to us. It isn't our way of life being threatened in reading. It isn't our moment with Jesus she's stealing. It isn't our daughter on the cusp of death when she slows the progress of the healer. It isn't even our sensibilities she offends. And so we read with delight as she is healed and made whole. We are able to celebrate with her. In fact, it never even dawns on us that we should do anything other than celebrate her restoration. Because everything we have and everything we are remains intact in so doing. But isn't that what's instructive about today's story? Don't we see here that we never need to be worried about the limitations of grace, healing, wholeness? Don't we see that in the world as Jesus sees it, there is always enough? If we don't see that, we aren't reading far enough. Don't forget, this isn't just a story about a woman with a hemorrhage. In fact, she doesn't even come on the scene until another story is already unfolding. Jairus, a leader of the synagogue, has come to Jesus. We've seen already. He comes to ask for his urgent intervention on behalf of his daughter, who is near death. It is on his way to her, on Jesus' way to her, that this scandalous woman brings her relatively insignificant, or at least less urgent, issue to Jesus. Can you put yourself in Jairus' position here for a moment? I know. Jairus' position is one of power and privilege. He's been handed an influential position based on being born into the right family, and it's likely given him wealth and opportunity. But isn't that the point? Shouldn't we be viewing these stories through the lenses of our own privilege? So can you imagine, given Jairus' preconceived ideas, what he must have been thinking to see a woman violate the law? A law that it was his job to uphold? And in so doing, put his daughter at greater risk by slowing the only opportunity she had for survival? That Jairus didn't himself simply dispatch the woman is actually a fairly remarkable part of the story. What then of the news that came? Your daughter is dead. Devastation, anger, an intense anger fueled by a level of grief that no one should have to know. That woman, insistent on seeing her own needs met, has taken enough of Jesus' time that his healing touch has been lost. Limitations have been met and the end has come. But we are surprised to see that Jesus keeps moving. And you know how the story goes. Even after everyone else thought the end had come, still Jesus restores life. But when he says, "Talitha kum," little girl, get up, something more than momentary happened. Yes, a child of God rose to walk in newness of life. But at the same time, and for all time, we learned that the very limitations of grace and hope and wholeness that make us afraid simply do not exist. You see, the tension in having these two stories so closely interwoven causes us to confront our belief that there is only so much grace, only so much well-being, only so much healing and redemption to go around. If that is the case, then it makes sense that we would push aside those who we think less deserving of wholeness. Perhaps it wouldn't be right, but it would make sense. at least. It would make sense, then, that we compete for wealth and position and power. But when that little girl stood up, we all learned that there is enough for everyone. And because there is enough, it is given freely. It calls to mind the plight of Jean Valjean near the beginning of Les Miserables, who, after being freed from 19 years of hard labor for the sin of stealing a loaf of bread, is taken in by a bishop. In the home of the bishop, there are a few very fine things. A set of silver, for one. In the night, the now less desperate, but still poor, Valjean gathers the silver in a fit of fear and weakness and carries them off into the darkness. 19 years of hard punishment somehow had not helped him reorder his life of lawlessness. The following day, he's caught and returned to the bishop with the silver. The bishop's understanding of the silver, though, was not that it belonged to him, but that it existed for the well-being of God's children who needed it. Rather than send Valjean away again into prison, he told his captors that the silver had been given freely, and he noted that the two silver candlesticks had been left behind, and he added those in as well. They should fetch a good price, he said. Just as the woman with the hemorrhage sought to steal a moment of Jesus' time, so Jean Valjean tried to steal the silver. So though she may have tried to sneak up to Jesus and steal a moment, we cannot charge the woman with any crime, because you cannot steal what is given freely, and you cannot sneak in when the door is open. There may come a day, or perhaps the day has already come, when someone will require something of what I have, perhaps something I possess, or perhaps the sense of comfort or even security that I normally carry. When that moment comes, it will be only natural to be concerned about my own well-being and those whose well-being is tied to my own. It will be understandable to draw in, to react, to be punitive, retributive, to protect, to close down, even to fight back. Those reactions are drawn, though, from a sense of fear that if what is mine is taken, then I will be left without. I pray instead that in that moment I might recall Jean Valjean, that I might recall the bishop who nullified the crime by giving freely. I pray that in that moment I might remember the woman who had, her entire life, stood aside from society because she had not the health that others expected of her. I pray that I might think of Jairus and know that even the privileged find despair once in a while. And I pray that I might think of Jesus, who set this table before us today, this table where even the lawless are deemed righteous, and where there is enough for everyone, freely given. Amen.